It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
We are back live. It is Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Today, 8 to 11. To take your calls, questions, and talk about everything that matters to you when it comes to investing and your money. We try to be the most objective financial, live financial talk program in the country. We continue to try to do that by giving you what we really believe is the best answer that we can find for you if you're trying to, if you have some sort of financial tiebreaker question. Which direction do we go, Wes? I've got a pension. They want to give me a lump sum versus a monthly amount. Which one do I choose? I've got an IRA or a 401k that needs to be rolled over somewhere. What do I do with it? How does that work? And then where does it get invested? I'm nervous about running out of money over time. What's the best way to distribute those assets? We're here to answer those questions. The number at 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. If you are in Texas or Seattle or California, Arizona, Michigan, you can call us 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, that's just it's 1-800-WSB-TALK as well. And the theme today really goes back to, how do you sustain and not run out of money? How do you sustain the harvest? The number one fear for most Americans when it comes to money is pretty simple, and it makes total sense: running out. You've all thought about it. No matter how much money you have, you think worst case scenario when it comes to money, because it's emotional. And it's smart for us to preserve what we have. So how do you avoid doing so? And there's a lot of different ways to do this. And there's a lot of ways to approach harvesting the assets that you've saved. And we're talking about a really important version of that today. It's a little more specific than just owning ETFs. And ETFs are a wonderful vehicle, low cost, highly tax efficient. You can be very specific and have a narrow ETF that may only hold 30 companies or 10 companies, or you can own one that owns 500 or a broad market index. But in some cases, in some cases, particularly when you are in those harvest years, there may be one step better than owning ETFs, and that's owning individual companies, the good old-fashioned way, individual stocks, provided you still have enough that you're diversified. And that's, I think, a key point to all of this. And again, I go back to the thought that as bond yields are very low today, most families have had to make up for that somewhere. You either have more in the equity side of the equation, or you have more just sitting in cash, not generating as much as you need. And this comes back to, for so many families that need a little bit more, or maybe a lot more in some cases, than the portfolio is actually yielding. In a perfect world or ideal investment world, you need 4.5% from your investments to supplement Social Security and maybe a pension. And you have a yield or a portfolio yield that is the same thing. So you've got a 4 or 4.5% yield. So you're only eating what's in the fridge. You never have to go to the freezer and thaw anything out, because you have this generation. There's fruit that grows every year, and all you're doing, eating the fruit. You're not harvesting or cutting anything down. And it's a way to really ensure that if you stay with that same discipline and you're only taking or spending what gets produced, then technically, how do you ever run out of money? It's a way to really alleviate those fears and the anxiety of running out. So here's a quick, I want to go through an example of two different ways of looking at this. And we started this, and I want to get through this example in this segment, and then we'll go to calls here on Money Matters. Doris and Jim, they've got $1 million. They have a little bit of social and pension, but they need a full 4% a year from those investments. Their portfolio, though, for now only generates 3%. So they need an extra 1% by selling something in the portfolio. Two scenarios. The first scenario, and in both scenarios, by the way, all they own is the Dow. All they own is the Dow Jones 30. Scenario one, all of that is just in one ETF. They have an ETF that just holds the 30 Dow stocks. So technically it's just one position with 30 positions underneath the hood. When they sell their 1%, the 1% stake in that they need, they're selling everything inside that ETF. They're selling it across the board, all 30 Dow stocks. Some of those stocks have done well in any given year. Some of them have not done well, and their prices are currently low. Currently, some of the companies within the Dow you might not want to sell at this period of time. So it's an across-the-board scenario when you're selling an ETF, because the whole basket has a piece comes off of that whole basket. Instead, let's think about owning the exact same mix of securities. This time, though, it's each individual Dow stock. Again, of course, there's 30 of them. Doris and Jim, scenario two. They own the 30 companies as opposed to the one ETF. They need, again, the same thing. They need 1% more than their portfolio is kicking out in cash flow. So, it's time to sell. Sell 1% of that $1 million. Now, 1% isn't that big of a need in any given year. It's only $10,000 to supplement their income. If they own 30 stocks, all they need to do is sell a small piece of that, of not necessarily every single stock. In fact, they could just sell a little bit of the pie. Let's say you just identify four of them, $2,500 each, four stocks, they have their $10,000. And that allows them to fill their income gap that they have. But here's where it gets interesting. By doing it this way, unlike in an ETF, when you sell, you're selling pieces of everything, both up and down. Instead of doing that, they have individual stocks to choose from. And they may never have to sell any of the losers. They may never have to sell something while it's down. Here's an example. And this even worked back in 2008, when the whole world was basically falling apart. In 2008 was the very worst stock market year that you have ever faced. Unless you're 90, by the way, and you lived during the stock market crash of 1929, and you lived through the Great Depression. At the end of the carnage in 2008, there were 28 stocks in the Dow that were in the red. 28 out of 30 were net negative, and in a significant way. But two of those stocks, two out of the 30, were actually positive on the year: Walmart and McDonald's. Now imagine if you had equal percentages in each one of these companies. So the $1 million is divided by 30. It's about $33,000 for each company. Walmart was up 18% in 08. McDonald's was up about 6% in 2008. So Walmart was up $9,000. That's 18% gain on the original 33. McDonald's was up about $2,000. The 33 in McDonald's turned into about 35. If you only took your income from the stocks that were up, and in this case, there were only two of them, and you didn't sell any of your temporary losers while they were down, Jim and Doris could have taken $8,000 from Walmart and $2,000 from McDonald's. Those are the only two that were up. Now, remember, there's a big difference between realized and unrealized. It, particularly in investing, but in life too, there is the big difference between what you are realizing and unrealizing. By realizing those gains, again, 80% of it came from Walmart, 20% from McDonald's, Doris and Jim realized a 15% rate of return, or weighted rate of return on those two. Now, 15%. It was just on those two stocks, though, and much of that gain was from one big winner, Walmart. The rest was from McDonald's, also a winner. And in this scenario, they scraped nothing off the other 28 positions that were in a losing position for the time. Remember, the real risk in investing is having to sell when the stocks that you own are down. That's the risk. So in the scenario I just went through, we technically, Doris and Jim didn't lose anything. They only took some of the gains off the table. And if you think about it this in this particular way of supplementing your income, it forces you to sell high as opposed to selling low, which is, one, a form of rebalancing, something that's proven to reduce your risk and increase your returns over time. And two, it forces you to sell high, not low, which is the cousin of buying low and selling high, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. Now, if you're scared of stocks, I get it. They're emotional for most people. The world's a scary place, and I understand that. But when you say you're risk adverse, it's really difficult to quantify what that means, because really risk is just about volatility. In volatility, even if you end up generating positive returns over time, your real risk is having to sell while your holdings are in the midst of a pullback, being forced to sell low. If you look at your income strategy as cash flow plus having to sell some individual companies, it drastically ups your chances of having some winners, even in terrible years. And it largely takes away you having to sell assets while they're down. So during the harvest years, you're living off the fruit of your labor. You're trying to take only what you need from the portfolio. And ideally you're just taking your income, but in the scenario with Doris and Jim, they need to eat a little bit what's in the fridge. But if your cash flow is only 3 or 4 and you need 4 or 5% every year and you have to dip into the freezer, this individual stock methodology points to a way that really it reduces your need to sell low, which is that's exactly what we're all trying to do as investors. If it worked in 2008, it certainly works in other years when the market does a lot better. You'll have a year like 2016 where you ended up with, the Dow was up 13.5% in price, but you had companies like Caterpillar and United Healthcare and Chevron and Goldman Sachs that were up 37 and 36 and 31 and 33. If you need a little bit of extra income, you can take it from those areas that really had years where you had companies that really blossomed in a year. And again, you're just taking a piece of that gain off the table, not selling your losers, not digging a hole when you're already in a hole. And that's what we're trying to do. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. We're going to go to the phones when Money Matters returns. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Under the Money tab, we publish financial articles almost every day. I invite you to take a look at that on these very topics that we talk about on radio. We end up turning into articles. Stay tuned right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Back live from Money Matters, right to the phone, Sue in Dallas, Georgia. Sue, good morning. What's going on? How can we help?
Good morning. Hi. I have a 401 with an employer that I just got laid off with, and I'm not sure how to go about changing or moving it or what to look at other than hiring a financial planner to assist me with this, but I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around it.
It's your ducks in a row, Sue. How old are you?
Yes, sir. 53.
So let's just say that first of all, this is a good time to kind of take stock. So this is a time to take stock in your whole financial life. That's number one. So it's a good opportunity to do that. Number two, I think of this, here's some low-hanging fruit. Do you know what your Social Security payment's going to be when you're 66?
No.
Perfect. This is a good time to go to ssa.gov, which is the Social Security website where you can answer some questions and they'll give you your exact Social Security. So figure that out. That's easy. Do it today as soon as we get off the phone. And then start thinking about that 450. The 450 is more than the 450, right? Because if you extrapolate that out, I'm going to do this on my HP 12C calculator. The 450, let's say you add 20 grand a year for the next 10 years, you go to 53 to 63, and you save 20 a year, and you make 4% a year. That 450, Sue, will turn into a little over 900,000. So the 900,000 is going to be your supplemental income at 4%. That's 36 grand a year. It's $3,000 a year, or $3,000 a month. In addition to, Sue, Social Security and pension. So let's find out Social, and then we can talk about. In fact, I'm going to have you hold on because I want to talk a little bit more about getting this money to work over the next decade for you. So hang on, Sue from Dallas, Georgia. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, right here on News 95.5 and 10:36, and we're going to go right back to the phones to answer your calls and questions. 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm going to go right back to Sue from Dallas. Sue, I thought this was going to be a quick question, in and out, done, but we didn't get through this, and I wanted to continue the conversation. So are you still with me?
I am.
I sure hope so after that long intro for you. Everyone's like, oh, I hope Sue's still on the line. All right.
I am.
So you're 53. Go ahead.
Social Security. I didn't, while I was on hold, I did go ahead and go to SSA, and by the age of 62, it's $1,600 a month, a little over 16.
And giving, is your full age 67 or 6? 67, probably.
For the retirement would be 62, or at 67, it's $2,300.
Let this be, if you are listening right now, and if you just tuned in, Sue and I were on the phone at, I want to say exactly 10:26. It is 10:37. It's been 11 minutes. During that 11-minute period of time, in real time, Sue went to SSA.gov and answered probably 4 security questions. They identified it was actually Sue and gave her future income stream for the rest of her life. That is a pretty remarkable turn of events, Sue. And I had no idea that you were going to do that, but it's just a great example of it. It literally takes under 10 minutes to find out. And you, what did they ask you, by the way? Like your mother's maiden name, where you were born? What was your security question? Don't answer it for us, but what was the question?
Well, actually, I didn't even go that route. They ask you that if you're trying to calculate today. So since we're the beginning of the year, all I said is if you've already retired and you put in what your income was for last year and your birthday, and then they calculate it for you.
Okay, so this is an estimate, but it's...
Yes, an estimate.
Okay, this isn't your exact. Okay, this isn't your exact. But it's pretty darn close. So we figured out some pretty important thoughts here. One, Sue knows what her Social Security is going to be. We know that she's 53. This $450,000, we did some quick math on my HP12C, present value, future value. And if Sue saves another $20,000 a year for the next 10, grows it at 4%, she'll end up with a little over $900,000. And then that $900 at 4% withdrawal rate will be $3,000 a month. And I guess the question is that going to be enough, Sue?
Probably
if you have, let's say your social is $2,000 a month, $2,000, and your investment income is $3,000, you're at $5,000 a month. Would that be enough to retire at age 63?
Yes.
So let's get...
I think. Okay. With the cost of living change, I would have to really give that consideration.
And it is important consideration. So again, $5,000 in 10 years doesn't have the purchasing power that $5,000 today does. The good news, though, when you get into retirement, you will have we're supposed to get some cost of living adjustment for Social Security. It's been virtually zero in the last several years, but it's because we haven't had a whole lot of inflation. If inflation starts to really tick up, then there potentially will be more adjustment north. But again, we go back to the real important part of this is that Sue has to take the $450,000 that she has today and get it working. So I would start looking at that nest egg, Sue, as your new future paycheck generator. And in the 9 o'clock hour, we talked about, and before we took your call, we were talking about a way to harvest your money over time. The ideal scenario is that you're just taking your investment income. So right now, how is this? I would suspect this is mostly just in mutual funds.
Yes.
And what kind of funds do you have in the plan? Is it a low-cost 401k plan? Do you like your options? Or are you thinking, I'd rather have this in an IRA?
Well, and that's the stuff I'm really unfamiliar with, where it should really go. 87% of it is through markets. The other stuff is some of the stocks and other items that I try to do a little gambling on that. Actually, the investment after the 1 month turned out to be pretty good. But going to an IRA, I mean, coming from an employer and then being laid off, my question also is, do you take that 401 out of that plan and take it somewhere else?
If you were 55, I would tell you that you may want to leave it, only because there's a rule, I call it the 401k hall pass rule, which I've written about on wesmoss.com. And it allows you to access those funds before 59 and a half. So the big milestone to get to, Sue, before you can take that money, before you're able to access the funds and not pay a 10% penalty, for most of us, that age is 59 and a half. And 59 and a half is the age in which you can access penalty-free your retirement money, IRAs, 401ks. However, there's a special rule, I call it the 401k hall pass rule, that if you're 55 and you leave employment from that particular employer, and if you leave the money in the 401k, you can access it penalty-free. However, if you're only 53, you don't qualify for that rule. So that doesn't, I don't see really any advantage for you leaving it in the 401k unless you really like your 401k options.
Okay.
And so the where you would be moving to would be an IRA somewhere. It may be at Vanguard, maybe at Schwab, maybe at Fidelity. The custodian itself doesn't matter all that much because the custodians are all pretty much the same. Big, safe places to store your money for the next 30 years. What really matters is what you're going to invest it in. And at your age, you're probably going to be looking at something like, right now you're saying 87% of it is stock market based, so it's pretty aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can deal with that kind of volatility for now, I still would advocate something like that. That might be a little high of a percentage because you're very much at the mercy of the market. But something like 70 or 75% in this current stage you're in still could make a lot of sense because you've got a long time horizon before you're ever thinking about retirement anyway. You got a full, really at least 10 years before you're considering retiring. And that, to me, I would say, look, yeah, 70, 75% in stocks is probably fine. When you move it to an IRA, regardless of where you move it, if it's one of those big low-cost custodians, Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, then you can start to figure out what areas of the world you want to put it in. And that, I go back to my conversation earlier about low-cost ETFs are a great way to do that and keep your fees low, Sue. You may also want to have some individual companies, some individual dividend-paying companies that at some point you're going to start using those companies. A, you're going to continue to use their income, but B, you may want to start harvesting some of the gains you get in any given year. And the good part about doing this all within a 401k, it's all tax sheltered. So do you have any other money outside of this IRA money or 401k money that you're able to access, let's say, between now and when the time comes you do get a new job?
Yes.
So you don't need to access this today?
No, not at all.
Your easiest scenario is to do a Vanguard account, IRA, and look at a target fund. So target 2030 would be your potential retirement year, maybe target 2025. Where you're going to have around 65 or 70% in stocks. That would be the easiest, quickest one-stop shop, Sue. So remember, you always have that option. The next iteration would be able to get a little bit more specific, and this is where you may want to go talk to a fee-only planner and get, do you want to have maybe a basket of 10 or 12 different ETFs and 5 or 10 individual companies that are, they're all trying to work in concert, work together to give you what that important formula, which is growth plus income. The income piece, remember, so you can control. We know where bond yields are. We know where stock yields are. We know what MLPs and REITs generate in dividends or distributions. That, as a portfolio, is going to be between 3 and 4% in the world we live in today. The rest is up to total return. And the question is, what kind of vehicle do you want to use? My choice would be ETFs and individual companies. And I think that's where you're headed here. So I love that we were able to do some planning. Hopefully today was helpful, Sue. And you're on a good track. You're on a very good track. And thank you for the call. We're going to continue with calls and questions here on Money Matters. We're going to head to, what line are we going to, Ryan Ely? We're going to line 4. Jim joins us. Jim's on 80 on 75. How's traffic, man?
Well, I'm on the go round road, and it's it's okay. I'll get out of here before it gets bad. Let's put it that way.
I like it. Well, you know what? We have a little spring break happening, too. So I think traffic right now is a little light. It's the calm before the storm. Jim, what's going on? How can I help?
Well, I inherited a sum of money and a trust fund. And in the trust fund was a basket of stocks that is about 30, it was at the time, 32 different individual stocks. There were about six or seven that were losers, five of which weren't losing very much, but there were a couple that were really, really suspect. I pared them out. But the portfolio itself is up about $30,000 in the last 6 months. Do I start harvesting some of that profit and putting it into something else in that portfolio? I don't really need it right now.
Jim, I don't think you do, only because if you don't need it, there's really no reason to do a bunch of transactions unless it's doing it from a rebalancing perspective. So if you end up with, let's say you have a couple of those stocks that have been in there for 30 years and most of, you've got this heavy weighting on a couple of companies that have done really well, then maybe it is a good time. I would say yes, it is probably a good time to rebalance. Because you inherited this money, you likely got what's called a step up in basis. So when you inherited it, you have a new basis. And that new basis obviously is a lot higher than what those stocks were purchased at many, many years ago. Meaning that you probably don't have a whole lot of tax consequences if you were to do some rebalancing. Because again, you have what's called a step up in basis. So this would be a good time, as opposed to waiting three or four or five more years from now when the gains are even bigger. This might be a really good time to sell and repurchase in some other areas that you may be light in, mostly because of rebalancing, not because you need the income. You don't need the money right now. There's no reason to do it. However, again, I would say, yes, this could be a good time to take advantage of the tax scenario that you've been presented with because of the inheritance. Jim, drive safe. We've got to run to quick news or other traffic. Thank you for the call.
And thank you. Appreciate it.
You are listening to Money Matters right here. I'm your host, Wes Moss. You can find me and the Money Matters team online, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's a contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and Ryan Ely and the Money Matters team will get back to you within 48 hours. With an answer to your question or to continue the conversation, we're happy to do so. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. Time for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. Prize line 404-741-0750. Ryan Ely, what do we have on the table today, my friend?
The WSB Weekend Prize Pack is a four-pack of tickets to celebrate spring break, April 1st through the 9th at Stone Mountain Park, and check out the all-new Dinosaur Explorer, and a family four-pack of tickets to the Atlanta Gladiators' last game on April 8th at the Infinite Energy Arena. This week's trivia question, Wes, your Tar Heels playing Gonzaga.
Yes, they are.
For the national championship. Obviously, UNC's in UNC, but where's Gonzaga? What state is Gonzaga?
Wait, did you just say UNC is over in UNC?
Yeah, very clearly, it's in North Carolina.
I think Chapel Hill just escaped your mind just for just a small split second of the world.
I had it, and then it was gone.
You know, obviously UNC's over in it's over at UNC. Gonzaga, though, is a different. In fact, I asked that question last night. Where is the Gonzaga from? The Beast of Gonzaga.
If you can tell us, you win this week's prize pack.
Well, they're clearly over in Gonzaga. Now, here's what we're looking at over the next... Well, this is just an interesting statistic that I ran across. We did this in the very beginning of the show. I'm going to repeat this. If you look at where we stand, we just marked the 88th day of the year this past week. The S&P 500 hasn't closed negative year-to-date yet. That's only happened a couple times since 1982. 2013, 12... 06 and 1987. What happened in those years? By the end of the year, when the market, we got this far into the year and it wasn't net negative or had not even closed net negative, the performance looked pretty good. 87 up 2, 06 up 14, 12, 13 to the positive, and then 2013 up 29%. So it bodes well for the rest of the year, is what I'm saying. We'll leave you on that positive note here on Money Matters. So yes, we are here throughout the week, obviously, to help you navigate what is obviously going to be a traffic mess. Triple team traffic right here at WSB, you can obviously count on. That's what they do, and that's what we do. So we appreciate you tuning in today. You can find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Enjoy the rest of this gorgeous day, and stay tuned for the best programming on the planet right here.